Hello, I'm Arnold Hamilton, editor of the Oklahoma Observer.
And I'm Marianne Martin, and this is ObserverCast, your weekly deep dive into Oklahoma politics and policy,
presented by the Mary Lou Lemon Foundation.
The president has clearly been testing the limit of presidential power. Started out sending National Guard troops, of course, to Los Angeles to because of protests against immigration raids there. Then decided to take over law enforcement in the District of Columbia. Then allegedly because of crime, the president began to issue similar threats of sending federal troops or federal agents into places like Baltimore and Chicago and Memphis and New Orleans, and on it goes. But the debates so far about this policy have tended to be about presidential power, as I mentioned, but also about racism and bigotry and the focus on people of color. You look at a lot of these cities that he's mentioned and threatening to send federal troops into are cities that have heavy African-American populations, large African-American populations, large Latino populations. But what often seems to be overlooked in this discussion is what may be a prelude to something that for a while there, when it was ever mentioned, if mentioned at all, a lot of us thought was crazy, conspiratorial, and certainly couldn't happen in the United States of America, impose martial law or some other means of affecting the 2026 midterms if the president thought they were not going to go the way that he wanted them to go. And alas, what we're discovering is that this is really a focus. It's an end game, in a sense, of where this president wants to go and why he's testing presidential powers to see the limits of presidential powers to see what he can get by with. And lo and behold, our old Oklahoman, Cleta Deathridge Mitchell, popped back up in the news recently, and because she said out loud what apparently the president and his crew have been aiming at all along. And she, in fact, has indicated that Cleta Deathridge Mitchell actually appeared on a program with Tony Perkins, the Newsmax host and former or actual Southern Baptist pastor, in which she says openly that Trump may try to declare that there's a threat to the national sovereignty of the United States so that he can then claim emergency powers to protect the federal elections going forward. That is a breathtaking statement in this country to be made by anybody, no less someone of Cleta Deathridge Mitchell's stature. And if you look at her history, but it surely signals to us that this is no joke, that this is no idle threat moving forward. So what we wanted to do with this week's ObserverCast is to get together with our old friend and Observer columnist, Cal Hobson, who actually served in the legislature with Cleta Deathridge Mitchell back when she was a liberal Democrat, believe it or not, back in the early 80s. And I was a young pup reporter for the Tulsa Tribune, Cal, if you remember that correctly, back in those days. So, Cal, can you kind of lead us off here and give us a little background on her? And I mean, she looked like she was really going places here in Oklahoma, although admittedly, her star soared at a time when the patriarchy, particularly in the legislature, was even more pronounced. And, you know, it was a meat market. She was an attractive, young, bright woman who, as you might imagine, was the focus of a lot of non-legislative, non-public policy interests of members around her. So she was not, as I recall, treated very well in her in the end, And it came to an unhappy end. And lo and behold, here we are 40 years later, and she is off so far right, you need a telescope to find her. How did this happen?
Well, much is made of, good afternoon, you all. Much is made of Cleta becoming an entirely different person. And of course, there actually were two Cletas even back when both were a liberal. And let me try to explain that. Cleta was elected in 76, beating a female Republican who had defeated Cleta's first husband. And so it was a bitter race, pitting, you know, pro-education, pro-university, pro-taxes if necessary. Cleta Deatherage, the main advocate of the Equal Rights Amendment in Oklahoma, versus a professor's wife who went on vacation to Europe during her one and only term in office, and Cleta managed to use that as a real wedge to win the race in 76 easily. Then, of course, Cleta had been one of the main advocates for the fellow that actually won the speaker's race. His name was Dan Draper, and Cleta had garnered 14 Democratic House members' votes, which was the largest block that went to Dan. So she could pretty much name the position she wanted, right? That's how that works. People thought she would want a higher education committee. Well, she surprised everybody and said, no, I know the rule, follow the money. I want to be the vice chairman of appropriations, which would require Draper to have to fire a guy who had been also a supporter of Draper. So he did. And that created a group of rural Democrats who didn't like her very much. But she's now in the position with where she could either, and I've got a prop or two for you, either the velvet soft Cleta, or, yeah, you want to look at that again. That's supposed to be a letter M here on this soft purse. Or she knew how to, yeah, you bet, as vice chair and then chair of appropriations, just hammer that, you know what, out of anybody that got in the way.
And by the way, for our listeners on the audio end of this, Cal just held up what may be the largest gavel I've ever seen. It's as big as his head. It's massive, isn't it? I mean,
yes.
My eyesight's not great, but gee, willikers.
Yes, yes. Is that better?
Was that, yeah? Well, yeah. So I assume that was from your
yes
pro tem days?
An official gavel there.
Okay. All right. All right. Sorry about that. I didn't mean to disrupt.
No. That's great.
Divert. Yes.
So she rocks along, money's coming in, she's getting her way on most everything, but if you got in her way, you certainly felt the sting of her tongue, talent, brains, all those kinds of things. Then, as you alluded to in your intro, her mentor, her leader, our speaker, got himself indicted and convicted in eastern Oklahoma in a vote scandal, and she was removed and was suddenly a backbencher in effect. Then, as politics sometimes happens, that speaker has his conviction overturned, and lo and behold, returns to the legislature, but doesn't return as speaker. So we've now gone from 76 when she was first elected to 84 when she called me one afternoon and said, and this was after the Equal Rights Amendment lost by two votes in the Senate, she called me and said, I'm quitting the legislature. You could have knocked me over. But she didn't really quit politics, did she? She ran for lieutenant governor and got knocked out in the runoff, and young Bobby Kerr III became lieutenant governor. Cleta left the legislature very embittered. I remember her departure speech like it was yesterday. And also, the other piece of this, as you know, was the indictment and conviction of her second husband, the prominent, socially connected, and once economically very wealthy, Dale Mitchell, who was chairman of the board of Citizens Bank. Dale was banned from banking. He didn't go to prison, but they then packed up their bags, moved to Washington, and something happened. Cleta went to work for a fellow named Dick Armey, congressman from Texas, who was leading the charge on term limits, right? And Cleta became very active in that effort after loving political service, never said a word about term limits, and now she's kind of the national image and voice as a conservative advocate for returning power to the people and capping the number of years congressmen and legislators could serve. That's kind of the setup of who she was and what she became.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned Dick Armey, who I hadn't thought about in years, but I remember because I was covering the Texas legislature and Texas politics at the time, and he was considered so far right you needed a telescope to find him. And yep. My guess is he's one of those guys who would be almost moderate by comparison to today, but she continued careening on to the right, didn't she? To where yeah. now to where now she's part of the Trump Steve Bannon, you know, et al. World.
You can't be more to the right than Cleta because her advocacy is, it to me, is so bizarre. She wants to limit people's right to vote by banning mail-in ballots. She would do that even when there's overwhelming proof there was no theft of the presidential election of 2020. She would limit access to physically the ballot box. You could just go on and on and on and say, what? This can't be right. But it is what she is. It led to her getting fired, as you know, by her law firm in D.C. Because they had said to their members of the firm, we don't want any part of the election in 2020. And then, boom, on TV, there's Cleta leaning over the shoulder of the president trying to get reelected, saying the following: I only need to find 11,672 votes in Georgia, please, to the Georgia guy in charge of elections. And he hushed Cleta a couple times, I noted, but she then led the top of the list of unindicted co-conspirators on a number of charges in Georgia.
Her transformation was, I mean, we've seen some remarkable trans. I thought one of the all-timers was Frank Keating, who was the only Republican you remember to vote for the Equal Rights Amendment.
That's
in the
right.
Legislature. And then after being unsuccessful trying to get elected a few times after that to other offices, to Congress, for example, he made that hard right turn and suddenly became, you know, a part of that crowd as well. So it was convenient, you know, for him and expeditious, I suppose, for him at the time. Yes. But what's really breathtaking to me is that, I mean, this is being considered and it's being discussed publicly at all in the United States of America. This is not the America that I grew up with, and I think that most people did, or that most people would approve of.
I would say that Trump, for whatever reason, I don't find him interesting or articulate or smart or any of those things, but a segment of the population does. And for whatever reason, Republicans in the Congress have decided, hell, we're not in charge of appropriating money. This guy is. And the Supreme Court has said, we're not in charge of the Constitution. Donald Trump is. So the normal expected barriers that our founders envisioned have folded their tents and said to President Trump, carry on and we'll see where this goes. That to me is a reflection of what you're scared of, that the normal constitutional restrictions have been overrun by Trump, and he has the nature, the ego, the wherewithal in his mind to do anything, including dispatching our National Guard troops to any city or any state he chooses to do so with impunity. And there are few people willing to stand up and say, this is illegal, unconstitutional, and can't be supported.
So what's really interesting about all of this too, first of all, it's been kind of a nice little civics lesson, like when can you and can you not deploy the National Guard? Okay, you know, Trump and I did not know that it was only at the governor's request, right? So he can't deploy a National Guard troop to Chicago without the governor of Illinois asking for the National Guard. Same in California, right? So there's all these oversteps of his authority as president deploying any sort of National Guard. And it got worse in California when he, you know, sent in some Marines, right? And so it just, I mean, there's the through line between all these cities that he sent the National Guard, which has been, they all have black mayors, period, hard stop. DC, Chicago, Baltimore, LA, notably, you know, former Congresswoman, you know, Karen Bass, every single one of them have black mayors. And so so there's that, right? Like this whole ploy with National Guards. And I, as you were talking about it, Arnold remembered the reason why he decided we needed the National Guard to not only lay mulch, apparently, in all the flower beds. And
they're landscaping in D.C.
Right.
Now.
And
yeah.
People are like, what is this, right? But it's because a right-wing influencer, I guess, had been so-called carjacked. And, you know, at the beck and call of this right-wing influencer, you know, we decide that DC is this lawless place, and he ratchets up the rhetoric. Anyway, so it's just this really interesting tactic that, you know, like they're trying to test, you know, he's trying to test like the limits of his of what he can do. Because you've seen Governor Pritzker in Illinois, like, we didn't ask for you. You don't need to come. And suddenly Chicago is no longer on the list. And I guess Memphis is next. But what's crazy is that we really don't have any sort of true law enforcement, like legal protections, right? There's no actual way to enforce when the president of the United States does something illegal.
Yes, because the Supreme Court basically said, as you were pointing out, if he is the president, we can't find the barriers in the Constitution that says he can't do these things when the law would apply to everybody else that claims to be an American.
I mean, so there's really no way, you know, I mean, and I think that's really kind of the very scariest thing that's happened since Trump took office in January.
Exactly.
Is that we just do not have any sort of law enforcement mechanism to implement the rule of law.
And yes, and let me just say real quickly, I know something about the issue of National Guard and when it can be called up by the president in case of like huge natural disasters, hurricanes, tornadoes, mm-hmm. whatever. The flooding in Katrina, Oklahoma National Guardsmen, more than 1,000 went down there. And certainly the Louisiana governor was delighted to see our Guards people arrive. We can be sent overseas. We were fought in Iraq, Afghanistan, World War II. I mean, there are no ways.
Herzegovina, you know, I remember Guardsmen yes. going over there. Mm-hmm.
Yes. There are ways to do that. None of which has Trump exercised except to say, I can do it. And I will do it, even if our guardsmen go to D.C. and you said they were putting out mulch. They also were handy for one other thing. They took pictures with tourists.
Your tax dollars at work as your democracy goes down the toilet.
And one funny thing about these people, these guardsmen that they have sent to these various places. See, there are laws on the books that speak in terms of the number of days you can be deployed. Find out that they're cutting these guardsmen off at 29 days in order to not have to pay them expeditiously or as much as they would normally be paid. So we're doing this to people who've been jerked away from their civilian jobs or families for no good reason, and then not even financially rewarding them at the proper levels.
Well, that raises a question. It points me in a direction that I was thinking about in all this. You know, I wonder if this gets worse and more prevalent, at what point, and if you know, Trump obviously is testing the limits of the Posse Comitatus Act, and he seems to have backed off a little bit. He's, you know, he and Stephen Miller, I mean, the people behind him, the brains behind him, all seem to say, well, all right, we'll send an ICE agents. We'll send them in to do this stuff, so because they're not active duty or they've not been activated. But I just find myself wondering, should he decide to really go all out and try to do this? What does the military do? Because I'm not entirely sure that a lot of folks in the military think this is a good idea either. And certainly not what we fought wars over.
As a matter of fact, there's a new report out, and I keep up with this stuff. The failure to report for weekend duty or your 2 weeks in the summertime, which is the normal amount that a normal guardsman will do, is at the highest level of absenteeism in the last 19 years.
Oh, shit.
That is the answer to your question about how this is.
What are they exposed to by not showing up?
Well, it doesn't take long if you miss, say, three drills. You not only don't get paid, then you are subject to dismissal from the National Guard. Locally, your local commander can actually recommend to the next level up, the personnel shop, and that's where I work part of the time. This guy's not showing up. This gal's not showing up. Okay, give a warning. And if that continues, not for very long, you're simply called into the commander's office, given your dismissal slip, escorted to the front gate. That's the end of that.
Which is a career killer in many ways, I would think, you know, in the private world, in the private sector, number one. But
it absolutely is. And as you know, governors have the title of commander in chief. Let's use STIT for an example, a bad example. Back when COVID was all rampant and we were deploying troops still during COVID, and you travel in the back of a C-130 for hours and hours, you're living in barracks, there were requirements to deal with vaccinations for COVID. Well, our guy, STIT, because our two-star black general, the first black commander of the Oklahoma National Guard, followed the law and dismissed a handful of soldiers who would not comply with the requirement, STIT fired him. And of course, STIT's never worn a uniform for a day. And this fellow, who I knew well, had put in nearly 40 years of service to his country.
In the context of the midterm elections next year, you know, it's kind of hard to make sense of. Well, okay, first of all, I don't try and make sense of crazy people because they're crazy and there is no sense, right? Like, there is no logic. But he's coming from multiple angles at this upcoming midterm election.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us, specifically Democrats, are kind of holding our breath that if we will even have one, right? But I mean, just the idea that we see in Texas redistricting to draw out Democratic districts, you know, so he's going to predominantly red states, not even purple states, but red states, to try and have them rig their maps so he can maintain control of Congress, because it's so precarious, but he has control of Congress, right?
At the moment.
So we see that, and we see Governor Newsom in California stepping up and like, well, guess what? We can do that too. But I'm just like, well, why do we need to rig the maps? Why do we need to rig the elections if we're not going to have them, right? So, I mean, that's like one side of all of this that's going on. And I had another thought attached to that, and I just lost it. But But then you have like the emergency powers, you know, you have the threats of the Insurrection Act, like all these kind of like test missiles, like going out to see what kind of resistance they'll come up against.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I feel like the most tangible thing that has happened this year is this deployment of the National Guard, or the threats of the deployment to the National Guard, and how they've kind of played out. And Chicago is really the first place where he like stood down, right? Trump stood down when Illinois was like, not only no, but hell no. And then suddenly Chicago wasn't like the thing again. So it's like, you know, on the one hand, we don't have a law enforcement mechanism, like actually enforcing our laws, making arrests, trying people for, you know, breaking the law. So that's one way we'd all be protected. We see like the overutilization and the massive mission scope of ICE, which is scary as shit, right? It is scary as shit. So you see that. So our own internal, you know, like state police force essentially is what it's becoming. We see this new budget drawn that will, you know, vastly expand their funding. But then on the other hand, you still see them trying to control the mechanisms of the election.
You said something there that's important. You talked about the vast increase in funding. Let me put a number on that. The Immigration Service somehow has been getting along and been very active with about $7.4 billion.
Mm-hmm.
$7.4 billion. The upcoming budget included in the big beautiful bill, mm-hmm. get this, is $64.8 billion, which is 8 or 9 times as much as the current. You talk about the chase for the waste, fraud, and abuse. My God. Jesus couldn't spend that kind of increase properly, let alone the people we're talking about. The other thing you touched on that is just right on point and will save us all from this mess, believe it or not, is a recent aggregate of a number of polls. And Arnold talked about this the other day. That polling data in 12 different categories shows Trump underwater in every one of them. Remember, this is a guy that only cares.
He lives and dies by public sentiment.
Yes. So they've got 12 of those all underwater, and 2 key categories that saved him in 2024 are the following: Hispanics, who were a +4 for Stitt in the 2024 election. He now is at a -36 with them.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And secondly, the age group 18 to 29, where he was a +2 among that youthful group, all because of the rah-rah from these young guys who liked all his blather. Let me get the number correctly. He is now at a -34. Jesus. So that is what gets his attention. I ain't very popular, and it'll really get the attention of the Congress that now has only 2+ seats left, mm-hmm. for Speaker Johnson after their loss in Virginia the other night.
But doesn't that, Cal, and I'm with you on that. I think he's in deep voodoo, right now with the American public.
Yes.
But doesn't that make him all the more dangerous? I keep thinking back.
Yes.
We've all been reading the historian Heather Cox Richardson's piece
Yeah.
on this a week or so ago. And she quotes, and I had forgotten about this. She's talking about this Nazi political theorist Carl Schmitt and his theories about democracy and everything. And basically, she quotes J.D. Vance in there as describing Schmitt's ideas this way. He says, "There's no law, there's just power."
Yeah.
And this is a guy who appears to be willing to give it a shot all the way across the board, and sort of figures the Supreme Court is not gonna stop him. That great institutionalist John Roberts, boy,
Yeah.
isn't he something?
So I mean, okay, so in my brain, what this paints is like for the next, what, 14 months roughly, like we really have a multi-front war on, right? Like we have, on the one hand, kind of the status quo, elections will take place as scheduled, right? And so we need to prepare candidates. We need to, because that might, it, that's like the easy, that's the easy one right now, right? Like, the Democrats getting elected, taking control of chambers, that might be the easy part. Right, like that story might be by itself, but it's all the inner workings and like the behind, like the back of the house stuff. It's like when your server's melting down. Normally, like you can get on your computer and it works, and it like, but it's when the inner workings really kind of malfunction. Like that's the shit that we've really got to pay attention to.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Right, like our hardware is really what's at risk right now. So even like we could have an election next year. We could have a Democratic majority in the House at least.
Yep.
But all the internal workings are really getting fried right now. Like
Yeah.
and that's like we've got to like look at all of that. But then I want to add another layer to this, and this is something that I had, of course, thought about since the 2020 elections. Actually, no, since the 2016 elections, with Hillary Clinton losing to Donald Trump, and it just really being a head scratcher, right? And so, the discussion of Russian intrusion, and manipulation of the elections. And I think the three of us are probably not the sharpest to talk about like digital propaganda, right? Like, I mean, I'm honestly a late adopter when it comes to any sort of technology, just out of like disinterest. So, but like, what's been really interesting because we know what happened in 2020. He loses. He pitches a fit for 4 years. And then through all these digital tactics, convinces people that he actually was the right guy, that the D's were worthless, blah, blah, blah. He gets reelected. But then what's interesting is this week with the assassination of right-wing commentator Charlie Kirk, it's interesting because my socials kind of came alive with people that have always been completely non-political in any sort of social media content, and they've all been like, oh, this wonderful person was killed, blah blah blah. I'm like, and I'm thinking like, what the fuck are you talking about, right? That's literally what's coming out of my mind. But then I start seeing people post like, no, the algorithms really do like pick and choose what content people see. So there's literally people out there who have no idea that he was the virulent racist and sexist that he was. And so it's just interesting to me because, the next 14 months, we kind of have this like thing and we see these technocrats sitting at the table bringing him literally a golden calf, right? Like the head of Apple literally brought President Trump a golden like thing. And I mean, and these are the people that like, these are the, this is the wizard behind the curtain.
Yeah, that plus a cabinet that thinks their role when they have a cabinet meeting is to pick out something that somebody else did and then turn to the president and say, this wonderful thing for America would never have happened were it not for you and your brilliance 24/7. Thank God for you. I mean, you got that going on. Then you pointed out the billionaires who show up bearing gifts. I mean, that class has now gone completely over the side. And then throw in this thing, this murder in Utah of a fellow who had a particular organization that was large and important, and they are now going to attempt to put a statue of that fellow in Statutory Hall, probably in the Capitol building, along with, I don't know, maybe Lincoln and Washington and folks like that. That's coming also, which will be a temporary bump, which will allow the other stuff like Epstein, like the deficit, like the increasingly unpopular one horrible bill, all to be shoved to the side, and the press, most of them, and the Congress, surely the majority, will go along with it, because those other things are really difficult, like the deficit, like the budget, that kind of stuff. Who wants to talk about that?
So that's like the middle layer of all of this, right? Like that is like the weedy, wonky, nerdy stuff that, you know, normal people don't care, don't know, don't want to know.
Bingo.
Right? So
right.
Like in that, but that is the meat, right? That is literally the meat of the sandwich that like
right.
makes it all work. So
but here's sort of I don't know if I call it a silver lining or not, but I am absolutely convinced, and Cal and Marianne, you may disagree with me on this, but I'm absolutely convinced that at the end of the day, people participate and or vote their self-interests.
Mm-hmm.
And I see things getting worse economically for people. And
yeah.
at the end of by this time next year, if someone poses the question to them, as Ronald Reagan once did, are you better off than you were? Then you're going to have a lot. And that's when I think Trump may actually be at his scariest with some of this stuff, because he will see the handwriting on the wall and know that if the House flips, and if the Senate should happen to flip, which is a real tall order, but if there's enough unhappiness out there, then all of a sudden, you're looking at impeachment investigations. You're looking at lots of things. I mean, the guy has clearly broken the law in many
Absolutely.
Ways,
Absolutely.
And is facing a lot of trouble if he can't maintain his hold over the two chambers, even with a Supreme Court. I think he's got that problem, and I think people, you know, individual unhappiness out there. I can't find a job that I like. I can't get paid very well. I can't make ends meet. I just see no hope. You know, that's a pretty dangerous electorate to be taken on 14 months from now.
And also, God, I had a thought and I may have lost it, but
let me jump in.
Get back to it, but.
You're right. It's what my mother always used to tell me when I would come home from a week in the legislature and I had all these big deals that I thought we had done, or especially I had done. I mean, it was terrific. And I would start to tell Mom, we've changed the educational face of Oklahoma. And she would get me another cup of coffee and would say the following, when are you going to fix my bridge?
Yeah.
So you are absolutely right, Arnold. When enough people get it
yes.
in the eyes, that's when it will finally change. That's what the polling data is showing us. Now, maintaining that and not let the lies and deceit overwhelm us is a challenge when you're dealing with a president that's willing to lie and deceive on an hourly basis.
I remember what I was going to say. So it's along those lines. So here's the thing. this president cannot rule through legislation. He cannot he is not passing laws. He is signing executive orders and executive orders only.
Yeah.
Which one are not binding statute, and two, the next person comes in and they're out the window, right? Laws are much trickier than that.
Yep.
So he has one big beautiful bill and all that. Cal, you probably know this better than any of us. But at the federal level, I mean, there's so many ways you can tinker with everything that was in that bill that just does away with all the little measures that they did.
Yep.
You get a new Congress in there and it can be repealed, it can be altered, et cetera, et cetera. So Trump is not going out there in a position of weakness or of strength,
yep.
You know, with the bully pulpit, like barnstorming the country to pass legislation, right? He's only got executive orders.
300 of them plus. That's right.
Executive orders in like 9 months. That's all he can do.
Yes, that's right. And they purposely, remember this, with all the worst stuff in that old dog, they made it effective in 27 because mm-hmm. they knew, for example, the Medicaid cuts, which are real, 15 mm-hmm. million Americans, they knew that was the death knell for them. And so they made them effective in 2027 after the election. But look what's happening in those town halls. People keep coming. This is not a flash in the pan.
Right.
That anger, you know, that's real. One other scary thing that we haven't talked about that deserves 30 seconds. Only this guy could have driven North Korea, Russia, China into the arms or vice versa of Japan and India, our greatest allies in Asia. But where did they meet and convene? They met in Beijing to talk about how to deal with the new problem America has created for all of them. Can you imagine that could ever happen? But it just did.
I mean, and you look at the platoon of countries that will no longer ship to the U.S. because of the shipping cost increases.
That's right.
These tariffs, like, I mean, this shit's going to come down, you know, like.
That's right.
And it's going to come down before 27.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of this. We're in a more much more dangerous world today than we have been in a long, long time. And I grew up like, well, I don't know, Marianne, did they have nuclear war drills when you were
not nuclear war drills, but I grew up on a military base, so I was
okay. All right, so you...
like, yeah, I mean, you know, Russia was not our friend,
right?
Yeah, I'm with you, Arnold. My little high school in '61, I remember hearing, I didn't know what it was, I later found out we would hear airplanes flying. Hour after hour after hour, and it was all the airplanes we had headed to Florida to get ready to deal with nuclear war during Khrushchev and Kennedy, and that was not make-believe, and I think you have to go back to that near miss to find the last time we were in as much unpredictability and precariousness internationally as we are today.
Nothing like drones over Poland, huh?
And now Romania, by recent reports this morning, that and you know who knows that he can bluff our guy regardless of what he's doing. Who wouldn't come to that conclusion when he's been a complete illegal dictator person, the highest criminality, and our guy says, come to Alaska so I can roll out the red carpet for you. What? I can't imagine.
Well, the Donald doesn't have the nickname Taco for nothing. I mean, so let's be real here on this. But, you know, I'm with you guys, though. I really see that this, the anxiety level and the connection that people are starting to make, they're reconnecting to the process because they're scared, they're worried. I see it intensifying as time goes by. A little, I was stopped by a woman heading out of church this morning who said, you know, hey, I'm looking forward to the, I'm going to the next No Kings rally. And it was like, I never knew you did that sort of thing. And she said, she says, I don't normally do that stuff. And we'll see how long I can last, an older woman. But I mean, it was like, she's going, by golly. And this is just, this stuff's got her on edge.
I told you about the, of all cities, the event we had, I think it was late March, in Moore, Oklahoma at the library. This is the hometown of a fellow named Tom Cole. Mm-hmm. And the event was labeled the non-Tom Cole Town Hall. 200 people that night in the Norman and the Moore Library showed up mad as hell, and they're not going to take it anymore. I would have been ecstatic if 30 had shown up. There were 200. And event after event after event I've gone to have set records. Gina Nelson over here at Millwood High School the other morning, Saturday morning at 10 o'clock, had nearly 200 people there. Can they win? I don't know. But it underscores what you just said. People who normally are hot for the football season, and they still are, or I'm going to go play golf, or I'm going to go shopping, more and more of them are catching on. My life is slipping away from me. My children's future is becoming more precarious. I went to the grocery store and one sack of groceries cost $60. It used to cost $40. That is sinking in my opinion.
For a president who promised to do better than that, who promised he would solve inflation, and it's only getting deeper.
From day one, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Internationally, nationally, economically, socially, militarily, the list is endless. Not a single promise that was made has been kept, except peace between two unnamed, I can't name them, minor countries in Africa that he keeps talking about. Outside of that, Ukraine is more precarious today than when he was reelected. Russia is in the middle of more property. They're bombing Kiev at a level unseen before since World War II. Japan hates us. India, Modi, who was going to nominate this idiot for a Nobel Prize for peace, wouldn't nominate him to be dog catcher.
Modi's not exactly a really nice guy either.
No.
That's just it.
That's well worth it.
Also on the line of fascists as well, right? In like global leaders. So if Modi's backing away from you, then maybe you've messed up.
Well, and our friend down in Brazil, who Trump says, I'll never do business with Brazil again because you're being awful.
Bolsonaro.
Bolsonaro just caught 24 years in the slammer.
27, yeah.
Oh, thank you, 27, sorry.
And Taco Trump's upset about that.
Yeah.
How dare they enforce their rule of law?
Exactly. Oh, my.
Supreme Court rule against a deposed leader. How dare they? Yeah, this is some shit. Sorry. Yeah. I don't know. But I mean, honestly, I will slightly positively. So whenever I'm talking with my partner right now, he is always very positive about things. And I realize my answer always is, I hope, or we'll see. I literally always just kind of piss on it a little bit, because I can never be just full on, no, it's you're right, it's going to be great. But right now, you know, I mean, there have been these moments of resistance against the Trump administration from Democrats in Democratic states.
Yes.
So there is some hope for successful resistance against the Trump administration, right? It's
right.
Just the kind of looming
like the fact that their only answer is always to increase the police state, you know, that's the scary part, right? Like that could just bring it all down. Although there's like these like kind of flashes of hope from like South Korea, Nepal of all places, Brazil, right? Where you see these leaders like brought down by young people in some cases. But following like the proper processes and the rule of law. But all of this is to say, you know, is like we do have states, very powerful states with very vocal Democratic governors, i.e. California, although Gavin Newsom needs to answer for his record against trans people. You know, there's all these Illinois, of course, Tim Walz in Minnesota, Tony Eggers in Wisconsin, although Minnesota and Wisconsin are very, very, very red leaning states. You know, but of course you have New England, all the states in New England. Anyway, so there's this possibility, there's this real possibility for pushback and resistance that leads to change with our elections. But are we over relying on the processes that are in place that are completely in jeopardy right now because of the growing fascist that sits in the White House?
We can't be because of the reality of how they behaved so far. But having been an elected dude for a few years, contrary to what elected people always say, oh, this is really hard. And oh, I don't know if I'll run again. And oh, I'm time away from the family and the sacrifice, blah, blah, blah. The number one thing elected people want to get it done is to get reelected. So let me give you two other numbers real quick that will scare the bejesus out of this Congress that'll do anything to stay out of Washington. They've been gone for a month and they're already thinking about the holidays. The number two items that Trump himself and others say the reason he got elected, immigration, big deal, the border, right? He's now at minus three on the border that got him elected because what you just said, they're picking up people who haven't done anything wrong. They're picking up Americans. They've thrown
Whole
two.
factory of workers in Georgia, half of whom were like completely certified Hyundai workers from Korea that were there to set the fucking plant up, like insane.
Well said. And Georgia, the great city state of Georgia, put, get this, $5 billion in attracting that plant. $5 billion, that's real money. And it can grow cobwebs as well as build cars or batteries or whatever it was going to do. The
Yeah,
other.
that foreign investment is not coming anytime soon, I would think.
Now, tariff money is, and contrary to what dummy says, we're paying it. We're paying it. He can claim it's somebody else, but it's us. The other number that should scare the Congress, incredibly, the economy, we've talked about it. That was the other reason he got elected. Biden was bad. I'm great. He's now at minus two in that aggregate poll. What does he have besides those things? Nothing except a bunch more bad news.
Let me pose this question because we've talked a lot about broken promises here. Can an argument be made that he's kept his promises to a core group that didn't like the America the way it was because it gave too much freedom to the workaday folks, you know, to the 99%. You know, I just I can't help but think that this the whole Project 2025, all that stuff was designed to make the rich richer and the poor poorer, and to in effect end this nearly 250 year experiment in self-governance, because you know the Elon Musks of the world and people like that, they didn't want anybody getting in their way. And Donald Trump is one of those people, and he's done right well for them. They're the only ones doing well.
Absolutely. And there was some advice from a really smart person back in the 19 teens and 20s about the point you're raising. His name was H.L. Mencken, and he had a lot of funny things to say. And the one thing that fits with what you just raised is the following. For every difficult, challenging, hard to solve problem, there's an easy, an obvious and wrong answer. And so those people who went to all those rallies and cheered when he would dance or whatever that crap was and say insanity, yes, they're going to stay hooked up because they can't bring themselves to say the following while looking in the mirror. I'm a complete idiot. They just can't do it. So that crowd is going to stay hooked up. But people going to the grocery store that were never in that column, I don't think they're going to get in that column.
Well, and one last thing that I want to remind people of, you know, I know that the Democratic numbers are even worse than the Republican numbers. You know, clearly people are not very happy in America about our political system these days in either major political party. But think about this. Despite Musk spending $40 million and all the other money that roared into Wisconsin, Wisconsin protected that Supreme Court seat and kept things on an even keel there. Democrats look in good position to flip governorships in, what, New Jersey and Virginia this year. A Democrat just flipped a congressional seat in Virginia, which gets the number down to two. You mentioned Cal.
Yep.
You know, everywhere you look, there were the two state Senate special elections in Iowa.
Yeah.
Iowa, of all places, that flipped.
Yep.
From Republican to Democrat, which ought to give Democrats in Oklahoma at least some, you know, Iowa's pretty doggone red too.
Absolutely.
You know, some reason for hope.
I'm gonna temper our language on Iowa. It's not quite as bad as Oklahoma, but it's,
it's still
the land of
you.
Stephen King and, you know, Charles Grassley. So yes. And Tim Reynolds. So, but I'm just gonna say they're not quite as bad as we are.
No, but they're in similar territory, is my point.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that, you know, if it could happen there,
mm-hmm.
you know, it could happen here.
Well, and yes, and one other thing, kind of in the middle between you two who want to argue about where my grandmother was born, which was Iowa.
We're going to school there right now. So yeah, I've got an interest. So.
She was a lifelong.
And remember, Mary Ann's PhD is from the University
from
of
Iowa.
So
my daughter was born there.
Hey, I'm the only one here who's popping off. Who
doesn't have a skin in the game on this one.
I've been to Iowa a few times.
As you were
life,
saying, Cal, sorry.
I will tread carefully here now.
Yes.
having said all that, Iowa at least turned out to be so bad for a gal who was just a star 5 or 6 years ago.
Oh, yes.
Joni Ernst is going to go
not
back home to castrate pigs or whatever she was doing. That's what she was doing before
uh-huh.
she got elected. So it underscores both of your points.
I mean, you know, if we think about it, I guess, for a second, to what you're saying is like we are going to see a whole host of really of the most noxious Republicans kind of taken out of commission. Should we ever see the end of the Trump administration, right? So Kristi Noem, oh my God, I traveled so much this summer and I was shocked. I've never seen the U.S. Department Secretary of Homeland face in, you know, like security, but hers was like right there over every single time, right? But I mean, just like Kristi Noem, Marco Rubio, like they will literally be put out the pasture.
Bondi,
oh God.
How about Patel?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Deputy Bongino. Just go around the cabinet.
But I mean, it's like these elected officials, you know, who will be no more, right? Like they will not hold positions of power in government. Should we be able to, and should the Trump regime expire when it is legally supposed to?
Yes, that's right. And when it begins to implode, I've seen that.
Oh, yeah.
It becomes a race for the exits. You know, it'll be, did I know him? Did I sit next to him? That wasn't me.
Who are you talking about?
Yeah. That will just explode. And
that's going to be brutal when that happens.
Yeah. And fortunately, our wizard Department of Defense guy will be back on the farm in Tennessee with his fourth or fifth wife and six kids, probably purvey in the neighborhood for the 7th. I don't know, but that's where we're headed, presuming Trump doesn't pull what Arnold started this conversation all about, which was, will we go on towards a dictatorship a la Germany in the 30s, mm-hmm. or will we say halt and have a 250th year of democracy?
Well, like I say, we'll see.
Yes, we will.
It's always enjoyable talking with you guys. So even when it's always like the very worst subject.
Great to be with you. And I meant to say this at the beginning. It's not too late. Arnold, and of course, Marianne always does. But Arnold, you look terrific. I don't know what you've done. You look 30 years younger. And I mean that. You just looked great the other night at our gathering at the bookstore. And that, by the way, was another wonderful event. Well done.
Thank you. Another sign, I think, that something's happening out there. I mean, we've had huge crowds building for these things, standing room only.
It was again. And it's kind of the summer, fall time frame. They could have gone to the fair, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So, well, thank you, man. I owe you lunch or something.
How about dinner at Junior's?
Oh, haven't been to Junior's in a long time. Okay.
Nobody has.
Nobody. Yeah, right. It's old school. That's funny. It's great talking to you guys.
Thank you for listening to this episode of ObserverCast. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends about us and share our episodes far and wide on social media. If you're interested in sponsoring ObserverCast, please give Arnold Hamilton a call at 405-478-8700 or drop him an email at ahamilton@okobserver.org. You can also support ObserverCast with a tax-deductible donation to the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation, whose mission is to help create a better, more informed Oklahoma. And to help keep us on the air, visit okobserver.org and click on the Donate button on the upper right side of the homepage. We also urge you to subscribe to the Oklahoma Observer, now in its 55th year of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comforted. We have a special digital subscription rate for ObserverCast listeners, only $1.99 a month for the first year. That's 50% off the usual rate for monthly digital subscribers. Just use the coupon code ObserverCast when checking out to get the discount rate. And finally, we want to thank Jared Beck for the music you're listening to in the background here. He's not just a resident of Norman anymore. He is now the Oklahoma State Representative for House District 44. Congratulations, Representative Beck. We're so proud of you. But you can still download his albums at iTunes and learn more, including dates for any upcoming performances at jareddeckmusic.com.